What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us here for this very special Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You guys can hit me up over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99. You guys should also be checking out Ethos Fantasy BB. We have a ton of new content over there. Our draft guide has been released, at least in part. We're going to continue to roll out new articles throughout the rest of this week and into next week as well. Very exciting stuff. Go check out Ethos Fantasy BB and sportsethos.com, where you can get all of that at the source. Now, today we are doing another team preview. We are joined by a very special guest who I've wanted to have on the show for a long time. It's long overdue, but he is here with us today. You can find his work at Pitcher List and at Baseball Prospectus. And he's also on one of the best new fantasy baseball podcasts that you can find out there. That is the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Beat, courtesy of Triple Play Fantasy. Carlos Marcano, you can find him on Twitter at CA Marcano. Carlos, how are you doing today, man?
Awesome, man. I'm really, really happy to be here with you. It's, as we were talking before, it's kind of bittersweet to talk about the A's, but we have to do what we have to do, man. And we might find some golden nuggets in there. Who knows?
We just might. Before we get started, how did you become an Oakland A's fan? How was that? How did that start for you?
Yeah, that's. I think it's because of Ricky Henderson, to be honest. Growing up in Venezuela back there in the 80s, I was this little crazy about baseball boy that got to see the Ricky Henderson playing with them, and it was just, I don't know, amazing. It was something that I could not imagine that a player could be so electric and so good. Also, it was more or less the time when McGuire and Canseco started hitting homers left and right for them. They won the 89 World Series, although I suffered the 88 when they lost to the Dodgers. So it was basically like the golden era of Oakland back in the days. Little could I know that it was going to be the golden era for a while, only that period for a while until who knows when, but they got me and I'm trapped. I'm trapped with them.
They had some good years in the early 2000s, obviously the Moneyball team and some years around there. They were competitive, but they haven't quite been back to where they were in the 1980s yet. Hopefully.
I've got to a point that I hate Moneyball and Billy Bean.
Yeah? How come? You hate
Because Billy Bean, he's just playing the game of the owner right now. They don't want to invest. That kind of diverged from what they were doing. But I mean, I cannot change that for the moment. So
it's got to be frustrating looking at the roster. Yeah. I completely understand. They don't spend money. They've traded away a lot of key pieces over the last couple of seasons. Sean Murphy's gone. Frankie Montas is gone, Sean Manaea, Matt Chapman. We could go on, but I don't want to get you too upset before we start going on the podcast here. I mentioned it off the top, your work with Pitcher List, Baseball Prospectus, and Triple Play Fantasy, but anything you want to let the people know you got working on or any podcasts you got coming up soon that you want to let people know about?
Yeah, well, we just got the beat writer for the Brewers for the pod, the fantasy baseball beat, and it was a really, really great target. It just become available today, and we're planning to have a lot more beat writers before the start of the season and during the season, so that's going to be something that I think might interest some of you know, old fantasy baseball crazy heads that are all around. And I will continue having my weekly columns in with Baseball Prospectus, and I'm preparing something for Pitcher List. So I'm trying to be busy. I wish the days had 36 hours, but I'm doing my deeds.
You're putting out a ton of content. You're doing great work as always. You guys should check out the Triple Play Fantasy Beat. It is one of the best podcasts nominated for the FSWA Baseball Podcast of the Year. Very deserving. We're rooting for you guys as the underdog there with all the other, the big dog podcasts, but definitely gonna be rooting for Triple Play there. But let's get started. Let's start talking about the Oakland Athletics. I did joke with you before that this might be a 5 or 6 minute podcast if we talk about just the fantasy relevant names, but there are some guys that are actually a little bit interesting, specifically in the lineup. And if we start right at the top, Tony Kemp is projected to be the leadoff hitter. I think that that makes sense considering his speed. You know, he walks at a decent clip. What are your thoughts on Tony Kemp for this upcoming season where he's being drafted? Overall, what are your thoughts on him?
To be honest, my thinking about this situation with the leadoff hitter in Oakland is that they should go all in with the Sturie Reese from the get-go. They don't have anything to lose putting Reese at the leading off for them, and Tony Kemp could easily be the ninth batter and no one will miss him. You know, I guess they're still worried about the young guy not having enough experience, but I think he's already 24. He has proven in the minors that he can do his thing, and Tony Kemp is just the leadoff hitter that you get when you don't have any other resources to get a true guy there. He missed a lot of opportunities to get on base last year. It's just he was only a 300 on base percentage, guys. That's not enough to be a leadoff hitter in the majors these days. Some projections have seen for plus WRC plus of 105, 106. That's just barely above average. So I don't think he's interesting in only for really, really deep formats, right? Other than that, I don't think he has fantasy relevance.
I agree with you. I think Ruiz should be the leadoff hitter. Now, with Kemp, he had better on base percentages in the couple of years prior. So maybe there's hope that he can, you know, get that up a little bit. The walk rate was over 10% in previous years. Last season, it dropped a little bit, but maybe he can get that back up. But I would agree with you there that he is not really somebody that you should be targeting outside of your very deep leagues. If you're doing a draft champions league, maybe then, you know, you get some at bats there. I mean, you're getting at bats from him, so that would make him somewhat valuable in those deeper formats. But I agree, if you're playing in a 12 team league, if you're in any kind of shallow formats, I don't think he is really going to move the needle so much. But I mean, to bounce around the lineup here a little bit, like you said, Esturie Ruiz, that speed is legitimate. He could be a 30 plus steal guy. It'll help if he's at the top of the lineup. Are you drafting him where he's going? He's currently outside of the top 200 picks still, but he could be somebody who has a lot of relevance. Are you in on him this season, regardless of where he's batting in the lineup, or would he have to be in the leadoff spot for you to want to take a chance?
Yeah, I'm not actively targeting, but if he falls for me in that ADP, I'll get him. And it goes back to Tony Kemp. It will probably not... probably there won't be too much time before Ruiz claims that leadoff spot. That's I don't know if it's going to be right in this season. Should be, but maybe they get some sense there in the front office or the manager, and they bump Ruiz at the leadoff spot. So for draft and holds, I can take him for a while. I'm sure that maybe some people is going to drop in waiver and fab leagues when he doesn't get all the opportunities at the beginning and stuff. And maybe you can get him on the waiver wire later on. That could be a possibility. But if he falls to me at that range, I'll get him.
Yeah, he's kind of, and I've mentioned this with a few players over the offseason, once you're in this range, we focus a lot on deeper leagues. Right now, a lot of people are doing draft champions where it's 50 rounds. But if you're in a 12-team league, you probably are drafting about 270 or so players. You could take Ruiz with your last draft pick, one of your last two draft picks. If he doesn't turn out, you can drop him. But the speed we saw last year, you almost take a double take when you see the speed that he had. So in the minor leagues, across AAA, he was only in AAA for 65 games, and he stole 48 bases.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was 49 AA games last year, 37 bases. He has incredible speed, good on-base capabilities that he showed in the lower levels of the minors. Walk rate, almost as high as his strikeout rate, about 14 to 17 there. It looks very promising if he is able to put it together at the big league level, and I think he could potentially be a bit of a breakout candidate. I don't know how great the counting stats are going to be necessarily, but if he stole 30 plus bases, I would not be at all surprised in that. Now, going back to the top of the lineup, somebody that I'm kind of surprised a little bit is still on the team, Ramon Laureano. I expected him to be traded a while back, middle of last season, even prior to last season. I wasn't, you know, I would not have been shocked at all if he was traded a year ago, but he is still here. Probably is somebody who could be dealt throughout the season, just basing it on how they have dealt with the rest of their quote-unquote like star players. Not that he's necessarily a star, but he might be the best player left on the, or he's close anyway to being one of the best players left on this team. What are your thoughts on Ramon Laureano and his draft price, which is about 215 right now?
I actually like him at the point in the draft. There's one thing with outfield for this season, it's proven to be a little shallow, and you at some point you would start losing options. Actually, at that range, most of the options are even Laureano, Brown, which we will talk about a little bit later, and then you go all the way down to Benintendi or and even Steuben Ruiz. They are like clustered together around the 215, 225. So the possible value drops a lot for when you get to that point in the draft. Thinking of that, Laureano could potentially bring 20 homers. It would not be crazy that he gets those. Actually, I think the Bad X has him for 19 and others, even ATC to 19. So that's a nice figure, you know, especially at that point of the draft. And the real value there is that he could provide 15 stolen bases. And if he is healthy most of the season, you could have a 2020 guy. There are just about 10, 11 guys on all baseball projected to be 2020 for this season. So that could be something really valuable there. And the problem is that the average is really low at around 230, 235. So that you have to be worried a little bit about it. But in terms of the rest of the stuff, I mean, of course, the counting stats are going to be a little lame. You probably will expect 140 between runs and RBIs together. So you should not be too crazy about thinking about you will get too many counting stats from that lineup. But just for the 2020 upside there, I think it would be good to target Laureano.
I like him. I like him a lot, actually. And if he does get traded, you'd have to figure maybe he'd bat in a worse position in whatever lineup he goes to. He might not bat second, but we'd see the potential for those counting stats to go up. And, you know, Steamer hasn't, and there's problems with Steamer's projections. I'm not the biggest fan. Sometimes they tend to overvalue certain players, but they have him for 21 homers and 20 stolen bases and a 232 batting average and exactly 140 runs in RBIs. And if he does get traded, maybe we can push that 140 to closer to maybe the 160 range. And where he's going after pick 200, like you said, outfield, especially five outfielder leagues, which is a lot of most of the NFBC leagues.
Yeah,
it's tricky, and they start going very quickly. Laureano could be somebody who jumps quite a bit ahead of that in terms of how he's going to finish the season. In terms of a player rater, I could see him definitely finishing inside of the top 200, and it wouldn't be much of a stretch at all for me. He is one of my top 50 outfielders. I think I have him at 48, 47. Yeah. But there's potential for him to go even higher than that. So I do like him a lot. And I like the guy who's batting right below him in the lineup as well, Seth Brown. I've seen a lot of people talking. There's been some tweets hyping him up a little bit this offseason, saying that he's undervalued, that he's going a little bit too late in drafts. He is the highest player based on NFBC ADP right now in this lineup. I'm just looking at drafts that have taken place since January the 1st. He's going at 209, and he is the highest Oakland A by ADP. But I like him. Even at that price, so he's the most expensive A, but he's not expensive at all, really. Same kind of range as the other two outfielders that we mentioned in Laureano and Ruiz. What are your thoughts on Seth Brown for the 2023 season?
So Seth Brown is actually the guy that I'm targeting from. It's the second. There's another guy that we will talk about him later on that I'm actively targeting from Oakland, and especially for really deep formats like Otto New. which you can get him really cheap at the end of the auction, $2, $1, $3 max. So, and it's because Brown has the potential to be a 30 home runs guy easily. He has a lot of power. He has issues with the contact. He has 20 where he's around 26, yeah, 26.3 strikeout rate last season, and he's been moving around that number his whole career. We all know that, but he isn't bad at taking walks. So he's kind of these guys that are not just swing and miss. He's going like a true three outcome guy, you know, and he's batting at the best position in a lineup. He will get the playing time. He has the power. He's gonna make the most out of his opportunities, and he's really, really cheap. He could provide a lot of value at the outfield at a really modest price. So if there's one guy that I recommend to be targeting from that lineup, yeah, definitely Seth Brown.
He had 25 homers and 11 steals last season. He's projected for all the projection systems have him for at least 20 homers and at least 7 stolen bases. And at that point in the draft, you know, it's not going to be crazy production in terms of batting average or the runs and RBIs. But, you know, if he did drive in 75 runs, I wouldn't be shocked by it if he scored in the 60, 65 range. There's a lot of value. And, you know, even though this team is not, you know, they're not going to be making deep playoff runs, if you're talking just about fantasy, there are guys, you know, they're all fairly reasonably priced here. The guys we've mentioned so far at the top of the lineup, they're not going to necessarily win you your league, but to provide you solid depth, either at the end of your shallower drafts or in the middle of your deeper ones, Brown, Ruiz, Laureano, you know, maybe not so much Tony Kemp, but those three outfielders that we talked about, there could be a lot of value there. The guy that is going after, well, not necessarily, I'm not talking about draft price, but in terms of the lineup, is Jesus Aguilar. And he's kind of interesting to me as well. We know that there is a lot of home run potential with him, and he is very cheap in drafts. He's going after pick 500 in a lot of drafts. What are your thoughts on Aguilar? Can we see kind of a bounce back from him this season?
I have to be completely honest. I would stay away of Jesus Aguilar as much as possible. I'm actually thinking he will not finish the year and the restaurant. He will be DFA'd at some point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The thing with Aguilar is that moving into this huge park like the Coliseum, and it's not like he was in Coors before or in Cincinnati, right? But the Coliseum is gonna suck away what's valuable from him, which is his eventual power. And I think that he's going to regress really badly there. I don't think Aguilar putting up a one of the old seasons where he could be the guy that clean up and it would be useful. He's getting the chance because Oakland is cheap and they wanted someone for cheap too. And I hope the guy proves me wrong, to be honest. He's a fellow Venezuelan. He's a nice guy, a great person. And if he can take a revival there in Oakland, I would be happy, but I'm not putting my money on it. I think there's a guy in the roster that will take his place and before the All-Star break.
Wow. I mean, the projections tend to agree with you. They don't have him playing more than about 110 games. That's the highest projection. And they don't really see the power coming back either. The highest projection for homers is, take a guess, Steamer. They have him for 17 there. 237 batting average. But going to that huge outfield in Oakland is probably not going to do so much good for him. I think the best case scenario is probably about 20 home runs, and that would be if everything goes according to plan and he does stay on the team. But you know,
Dakota has him for 13 homers. So
wow,
yeah, and that at the 50th percentile. So I'm really not very, very hopeful from him.
I think the early drafters are kind of a little bit confused, and I'm looking at the last 70 drafts. This is from January 1st. His minimum pick is 358, and the maximum pick is 721. So there's quite a big range on Aguilar. People don't really know what to think, but you know, the more you talk here, the more I push him down the board. You know, just thinking about that ballpark, the balls that will die in left field there for him. It's probably not so rosy. They might give that opportunity to somebody a little bit younger throughout the season as well. So probably staying away for sure in your shallower leagues. There's no need to draft him, maybe in a draft champions. But yeah, overall, Carlos is staying away from Jesus Aguilar, and I think I am going to be as well here. Jace Peterson projected to bat fifth in this lineup. I'm not so interested, really. Do you have any interest in Jace Peterson for the season?
No, not really. I mean, there are a lot of guys that could be more valuable than Jace. He has the flexibility that he can play anywhere, and he will bounce around, and he'll get a lot of at-bats because of that flexibility, right? He can play second, third, even some shortstop. I mean, he will be like this super utility that they will use everywhere. But he can't bat for average. He has little power. Being in Oakland already, it's a problem to get counting stats, and he will be fifth. That might be a good thing, but not in this lineup. So I'm not seeing this is the kind of player that's might be good in real life, real baseball, because he will help fill a lot of holes in that lining up. But for us in fantasy, there's really not a lot of value. Maybe the stolen bases, if you're desperate at that point and you didn't get your stolen bases fixed by the time you get to where he is, well, he'll give you double digits there, but in the low 10. So, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think like a couple of guys we mentioned, draft champions, if you're trying to just get some at-bats maybe later on, he's not going until close to pick 467 is where he's going in these recent drafts. He is more just somebody to kind of fill out your playing time on your bench, but nobody that you should really be too interested in your shallower leagues. The next guy up is interesting to me, and I don't really know exactly if anybody knows what he could be yet, and that's Shea Langeliers, the young catcher. I believe he came back over in the Sean Murphy trade, or was it a different trade?
He came from. Oh my God! It was last year.
I think it was Atlanta, wasn't it? I think he came from Atlanta.
Dodgers, right? Wasn't he?
I can't remember now, honestly.
You mean Atlanta. Yeah, you're right.
It was Atlanta. Yeah, it was Atlanta. But was he, or maybe he was traded before the Sean Murphy deal, and it was a different trade. Was it? It was Matt Olson trade. It was the Matt Olson trade when he came over. Right. He's shown some promise, and I think that there could be some potential that he could have value in a two catcher league. What are your thoughts on Shea Langeliers for this year, and even going forward, his potential in this lineup?
So, yeah, I totally agree with you. The value with him is mostly in two catchers leagues where you can – he'll play a lot. He'll play a lot because Oakland doesn't have too many options there, right? He's a guy that he was highly regarded in as a prospect. He's still a prospect, actually. He is even though he's 25 already, he doesn't have all that major league experience yet. So and his backup is Manny Pena. So Manny Pena won't take away too many, just for rest and things like that. So he will have the opportunity to get the experience and the value up there. And as a second catcher, he may help you get the volume that you need. He strikes out a lot. That's what he's shown so far. So don't expect him to have a high average. But most projections have him for more than 15 homers. He actually have 20 homer seasons twice in the major, well, 22 and 19 in the minor, sorry. So he has power, and he didn't And he showed some plate discipline in terms of getting walks, not in terms of, because he is a happy trigger. He likes to swing at everything. So if you need some pop and you need to fill that second catcher in your league, I think he's viable.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, he hit for a fairly low batting average at the major league level, 218 over 40 games. But if you look at what he did in AAA, 92 games in 2022, he hit 283. If you look back at AA in 2021, he hit 258. So I don't know that he's necessarily going to be that low in mm-hmm. terms of like what he did in the majors. It was 218, but could he be like a 240, 250 guy? Potentially, it could be there with, you know, this season, probably 15 home runs. He might throw in a couple of steals because we saw him steal a little bit in the minors.
Yeah,
I think there is value there as a second catcher. Not somebody I'd want in a one catcher league or as my first catcher, but you know, I like him and I like where he's going here, closer to pick 300. I think the value is pretty solid for him.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I agree with you.
Now, beyond him, there's a new addition here, JJ Bleday. Yeah, he was traded for AJ Puck a couple days ago. What are your thoughts on Bleday? I liked him in college. I kind of liked him in the minors, but there are some problems with his game as well. Would you have any interest for fantasy this season in JJ Bleday?
I think he's of course, he's a dynasty target. Everyone playing dynasty should have him. He showed a lot of potential since college, as you say. He's still raw. He's not polished at all. And the good thing is that he will probably have the major league at bats that he needs to polish. And to get polished, and that's gonna be good for his development and good for him. But in terms of fantasy or in redraft leagues, I don't see any value for the 2023, and he should be targeted, as I say, in dynasty. If you are in a startup dynasty league, get him. He will be a great player. Day around mid 2024, 2025.
Yeah, I liked watching him throughout the College World Series a couple of years ago. Seeing him in the minors, you know, he's got a lot of potential. Now, being in Oakland will probably not help his power out. Yeah. What's interesting to me is the projections really projections are usually fairly close when you look at different players. You know, some might say for a random player, 130 games versus 135, 20 homers versus 22 homers. They're usually relatively close, but the main ones that I use, which are the BAT, ATC, and Zips, they are very different. Zips has them for 131 games and 17 homers. BAT has them for 51 games and 6 homers. ATC, no, sorry, it's not ATC. It's the Zips depth chart projections have them for 107 games. So all the different projections are very different for him, from 6 home runs to 17 home runs. From 20 runs scored till 58, there's not a lot of consensus there, even in terms of the smart minds who make the projections. But I would tend to agree. Dynasty, I'd be buying him. I really like the play skills, even though he strikes out a little bit too much. The walk rates have always been very good. There's a little bit of speed there. And, you know, maybe you give it a couple of years, Oakland starts to properly rebuild. And Dynasty, he could be a great target. So I don't think he's really anybody to pay attention to for this season. He's going very late in drafts, past pick 600 most of the time. Maybe at the end of your draft champions, you take a flyer there because there's potential for playing time, but it's probably not going to be a great season for him at the dish necessarily. Give him some time to develop, and I think we could see it, but probably not for this year. In terms of the last guy we haven't talked about in the lineup, Nick Allen, any interest in him whatsoever?
No, not at all. McAllen, it's just more or less the same situation as Chase Peterson. He's going, let me double check, at around 600. And at that point, I'm pretty sure you already fixed your middle infield with someone else. And if you're looking for a bat or something, well, there's Daniel Buckleback right behind him if you need it, that can provide something else that Allen can. So I would pass.
I would too. There's no interest for me there. In terms of the bench players, maybe a little bit of interest. You know, Britton Allen, our friend Britton Allen, was talking on Twitter the other day about Ryan Noda, about how he's a very good target later in your draft champions. Aledmys Diaz, maybe there's some potential there. Christian Pache. Any interest in any of these bench names?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Ryan Noda. And I think that's the guy that it's going to end with Jesus Aguilar's job sometime during the season. He's going to be right from the beginning in camp, and he will probably end up breaking camp with the team. This is a guy that swings for the fences, but the guy takes a lot of walks. He's just always beyond, I think, 15% in walk rate. And that's amazing nowadays. That's twice the league average, you know. And for a guy that goes for the fences, that's an extra weapon there, because it's not, yes, he can just swing and strike out, but pitchers will have to be really, really sharp pitching to him, because he can force to take the walk. So he's going to see a lot of good pitches, more than any other of this type of swing for the fences guy. He sent out 29 homers once in only 113 games. That was back in Double A. Then in Triple A, he batted 25 homers in 135 games. He's a big threat on the home plate. It's up to see if he's gonna get the opportunity and he's gonna see the playing time. But I'm more than confident that he will end up with Jesus Aguilar's job.
I hope so. Just looking at these numbers in the minors, they're ridiculous. You know, not even just the power and the plate discipline, but the speed. He stole 20 bases in 2022 in Triple A. We saw him steal 14 a couple times in the minors. I forgot, and I didn't even realize, actually, that he was with the Toronto Blue Jays, my team in the farm system. I can't remember what we gave him away for, but I kind of wish we didn't, just looking at the potential here for him. I don't think he's going to be a 2020 player in the bigs necessarily. It's probably not this year, but he could be somebody that comes in for Aguilar, like you said, later on in your DCs. He's a great guy to target there. Going past pick 550, 567 is the ADP since January 1st. That's a bargain considering what he can do. Shout out to Britton, because he put me on to him last week when he tweeted something out. And I think the tweet got quite a bit of traction, actually. A lot of people are going to be into him. Hopefully not too many people saw that tweet so that they don't start to draft him. But definitely somebody to consider. Ryan Noda, N-O-D-A. Put that one on your list in your queue when you guys start to do your drafts, because he's going to be interesting. In terms of, and the lineup, actually, you know, the more you look at it, it's not terrible. It's really not. The top of it is all right. Kemp, you know, we said he probably shouldn't be a leadoff hitter, but let's say he is, followed by Laureano, followed by Brown, followed by Aguilar / Noda there. You got the young guys with Langoliers and Blade. Estuary Ruiz could potentially be very good. There are some interesting names in this lineup. It might not be the 27 Yankees, but it's still got a lot of guys who do interest me for fantasy, specifically for this season and beyond. In terms of the starting pitching, though, it does not look very good when you have Paul Blackburn scheduled to be your ace. In terms of Blackburn and this staff in general, what are your thoughts on what they are going to do for this season?
It's terrible. It's terrible. I will not sugarcoat it, man. I don't think we have more than a quad A rotation.
Right. Yeah.
That's what we have here, and maybe the question marks around Fujinami and Waldichuk is what could be relevant in terms of fantasy, you know. Fujinami, I mean, this is a guy we know his statistics in Japan, but it's also true that when players from Japan start, their talent don't specifically translate the first year or even the first couple of years when they arrive. Only, you know, this generational talents like Ichiro and Otani can do that. And not even Otani, because he was hurt at the beginning. So trying to, especially a pitcher, I remember guys like Ibachi and all these guys that came and couldn't make it, and they came with better numbers from Japan. So I'm a little bit curious, a little bit skeptical, and a little bit hopeful at the end, because I have to root for this team. But I don't have a share of any of these guys in. Well, no, I'm lying. I have 2 shares of Waldichuk in draft and holds. That's it, because well, he's like the biggest question mark in this lineup. This is a guy that had good numbers with the Yankees back then when he was a prospect with him. He had a 3.59 ERA in almost 50 innings pitched last year with the Yankees, and he had a nice K minus walk percentage of 23 almost. So there might be some potential, but then when he went up, he didn't make it that well. So it's more of a wait and see situation for me for this rotation. I hope they prove me wrong and they prove to be the Atlanta Braves of the 90s or something like that. Mm. But I'm not that hopeful.
Waldichuk does interest me. Now, he is the fifth. He's listed as the fifth starter when you look at FanGraphs and go to Roster Resource. But he is the highest pitcher in the starting rotation in terms of his draft price for this season. Trevor May is going ahead of him in terms of all the pitchers. But in terms of starters, Waldichuk is the highest. He's the only starter projected to have an ERA below 4 in the rotation. Yeah. Only projected for 7 wins. But, we don't really know with wins. You're going to have a better chance if you draft players on better teams. But if he ended up with 10 wins, would it shock you? It might a little bit, but it's definitely possible. Wins are very hard to nail down. And when you look at what he did in the minors in terms of the strikeout numbers, it didn't really translate so far in the small sample in the major leagues, which was only 7 games. You can't really hold that against them. But in the minor leagues, you're looking at a 30%+ strikeout rate and 35-40% strikeout rate, depending on what level you look at. There's potential there. He's got to get the control under control. But he did a little bit better in that regard. Walk rate was lower at the big league level than we had seen it at a lot of the minor league level. So there is a lot of potential there for Waldichuk. I wouldn't mind taking him where he's going at pick 377. Yeah. Again, not in your shallow leagues, but once you get into your deeper leagues, your draft champions, your dynasty leagues, he's somebody who is very interesting. In terms of the rest of the rotation, Kaprielian, Drew Rusinski, any interest in those guys drafting them?
No, actually, I would prefer to go a little deeper, and there's this prospect they have, Kyle Mueller, that they got him from Atlanta, and I think they have something there. This is a guy that had a 22% K minus walks rate in AAA last year with Atlanta, and he managed to have a 3.41 ERA. A good whip. He's a guy that has proven to have a good command of these pitches, and I think sooner than later he will be with the big team, because I'm pretty sure that this rotation will need as much help as possible. Who will he be replacing? I'm not sure yet, but someone will fall down. I'm really sure, and they will have to give Mueller an opportunity. And I think this could be one of those situations when a pitcher appears out of nowhere and does something amazing for a team that desperately needs it. I think I'm not a gambling guy, but if I would put my money on someone to be that black swan, I think Kyle Mueller has all the markings around him to be that guy.
He has put in his time in the minor leagues. I mean, he's been around since 2016. That was at rookie ball. But in the Atlanta system, they took their time developing him. He had good numbers in the minors. The ERAs and the pitching indicating stats were always fairly low in the 3-5, sometimes a little bit lower range there. The FIP was usually pretty low as well. I like what he can potentially do if he is given a chance. And the way that rotations work, I'm sure that he will start at least a bit for them this season. He's projected based on ATC to start 18 games, appear in 25 of them. So he could be somebody who is pretty interesting. I'm just trying to see where he is going in drafts. 4.67. He's definitely somebody that I think you could potentially see throughout the year, give you some decent value JP Sears is another guy in the minors who maybe he comes up, maybe he doesn't. Is there any interest for you there in a deeper league?
I would go for Mueller before Sears. I think Sears will take a little bit of more time yet.
Yeah, I probably would agree there. Sears is going 550. You know, these guys are not expensive. Even if, you know, maybe you don't have all the faith in the world in some of these guys we've mentioned, you don't have to pay up for them. And specifically with some guys we mentioned, like Ruiz, like Brown, more so in the lineup, but also with Kyle Muller, or Mueller, I'm not sure how he pronounced it, but there's interest there. Waldichuk as well. There are some guys who could potentially be very good this season. Maybe not with counting stats, but with your home runs, with your steals, there are some guys to definitely like. In terms of the closer situation and the bullpen in general, it actually looks not too bad. You know, if you're looking at some of these projected ERAs, most of the guys in the pen are projected for a sub-4 ERA. Trevor May is currently listed as the closer. Do you think that he will be the closer this season, primarily, anyway?
They paid it's the biggest contract in the whole roster, and I'm sure they will just put him as the closer just because of that, you know. I think that Danny Jimenez has a big chance of ending as the closer the minute that Trevor May have any kind of struggle. That's usually what happens with closers. Only 30% of the guys that start as a closer end with the job during the season. So I'm pretty sure Trevor May could be one of that 70% that loses the job before the end of the year. And the guy behind him that I think could take the role would be Danny Jimenez.
Yeah, I agree there. Jimenez actually had some saving experience last year. He had 11 saves for them. Trevor May, you know, he's had some good seasons in the past, but never really as a full-time closer. We've seen him close. It was 4 games in 2021. It was 3 games in 2018. It was once last season. He doesn't have the experience where you can just say, okay, he is going to necessarily take the ninth inning by storm and be that closer for the season. I think Jimenez makes a lot of sense to kind of not necessarily to pair with him, but you could based on the draft price. Trevor May just after pick 300, and then Danny Jimenez not until almost pick 600. So let's say you're in a draft champions, you take May and then you take Jimenez, you're likely going to have the closer there between the two of them. Might be a bit of a headache back and forth between who's actually getting them on a week-to-week basis. But I think it would probably be between those two guys. Anybody else you think may compete for saves this year, or is it pretty much just those two for you?
I think it's pretty much both of them, to be honest. And some people speculate that May is going to also be traded before and when they realize that they paid too much for him at some point to any contender. If he's doing well, I mean, if he goes really well from the beginning, he might be traded to a contender needing a high leverage guy or something like that. So that's something that you have to be careful. Having players from Oakland, it will always be risky in that regard. They might, you know, trade anyone. They don't have any kind of fixation with any player in their roster. So that's something that you guys have to be very aware when drafting people from Oakland.
Yeah, it depends on the player and the role. Like, let's say it is a Laureano. If he does get traded, I think that is probably likely going to be a boost to his value, where if you're talking Trevor May and he does get traded to a team, like let's say he starts off the year very well and he has 20 saves at the All-Star break, he'll be traded and then he'll be the sixth or seventh inning guy, maybe the eighth inning guy on a different team, and he would lose almost all of his value outside of a saves and holds league, one that would count them together. But
yeah,
very interesting to look at this team. Is there anybody that we've missed or anything else you think we should touch on?
I think we did, and I think we touched all the main points that Oakland has. I think this is going to be like a continuous you know, watching continuously how they move their roster, because they tend to recycle guys they have in the minors for some time. So someone interesting might pop up now in a while. They have guys that are in the minors like Soderstrom, there is Dermis Garcia, first baseman that has a lot of power. This is a guy that you might, if you're interested in dynasty stuff and prospects, It's a guy to be, you should be watching, because he has tremendous power, and he could be, you know, like the first baseman of the far future, or, and they might give him a try at some point in the, during the season. That's still to be seen, but we have to be continuously looking and checking the roster and seeing their movements. But for the moment, I think we've covered like the guys that for at this time of the season are on the main stage.
Garcia does have a lot of power. He had 31 homers in Double A in 2021. In 2022, it was only 68 games in the minors, but 13 homers. And he did actually play 39 games for the big league team last year. He had 5 home runs, 20 RBIs, and 13 runs scored, which, I mean, considering the games played, that's very good. Strikeout rate was incredibly high, which it typically is pretty high for him. But if he gets called back up again this season, we could see him actually contribute a little bit. He's not even being drafted in these redraft leagues, I don't believe. Well, let me just take a look here, actually. He might be going right at the end. 738. So he's somebody like with your last pick, if you're in a draft champions, you don't know where to go. There's no one else who's really there on the board for you. Take Dermis Garcia. You know, take a chance on him. If he gets called up, then you could see a lot of home runs. Not necessarily from the onset of the season, but later on down the line, he could be somebody that does come into play. Carlos, I really appreciate you taking the time here. I love talking with you. It's been fantastic. You do a great job on Triple Play Fantasy Beat. Your articles are always a must read. Is there anything else you want to let us know? Maybe we forgot off the top about what you have coming up or different podcasts or any of your work you want to promote.
No, I just wanted to thank you again for having me. I love what you guys are doing. Your pod is amazing, and it's been just getting better and better every day. And I have to really, really commend you for all the hard work you're doing. I know it's not easy at all. And you keep pumping content in your podcast with, you know, so much content that has to be recognized, because it's not easy, folks. I know it from firsthand. And no, I mean, I'm always rambling on Twitter. So there's the place where if anyone has anything to share or want to know, I can help with anything. I might not know the answer, but there's a lot of very wise people over there that I can ask if I don't. So I'm more than happy to help.
Carlos, you're one of the best. We really appreciate you being here. Check them out at Pitcher List, at Baseball Prospectus. And if you're not listening to the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Beat, you really need to. They're not just, you know, talking the three of them, which would be entertaining enough in and of itself with you, Torres, and Mike Carter. But you're talking with great people. You had Vlad Sedler on last week. You're bringing on different beat writers from all around Major League Baseball. It's really informative. You guys are very deservingly nominated for Podcast of the Year. Congratulations there again. I hope you guys do pull through and win. But check out Carlos's work on Twitter at CA Marcano. You know, he's doing fantastic stuff. If you want to see talk about Dick Allen or anything regarding fantasy baseball or baseball, definitely check out Carlos. You guys can find me at Joe Orico 99. Check out our draft guide, which has been launched. It's at Ethos Fantasy BB on Twitter. You guys can find it at sportsethos.com. There are, I believe, 4 or 5 articles there right now, and we're going to keep adding to it over the next couple of weeks. But guys, we'll see you again tomorrow. We'll be here again with another podcast. We'll be doing the Giants tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that one. Until then, take care. We'll see you next time.